Good morning. My name is Steve Montanez. I am 39 years old. Today is March 12th, 2020. We are here at Milton Hall at the NMSU campus. And I am speaking with Bill Carpenter, who is a great friend and a work colleague.
I am Bill Carpenter. In the military, is known as Billy Carpenter, but that I'm 72 years old. This is March 12th, 2020, and we're on the campus at New Mexico State University. And I'm with Steve Montanez, and he's a co-worker, and right next door, we work together.
Well, Bill, I really just want to say I really appreciate you agreeing to this, and you know, over the past 7 years that we've worked together, it's been great to get to know you, and I was really intrigued when you told me that you were in the, you know, that you do have a military background. So when the opportunity came up to, you know, to speak to somebody for StoryCorps, I was very happy to ask, and I really appreciate you agreeing to this.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and this should be fun.
Absolutely. Well, let's get right to it, Jonas. What do you say? Let's talk about where you grew up and you know, what it was like, and any particular childhood story or anything like that. Okay. Do you want me to start over with the question? Okay.
Well, I was born and raised in Artesia, New Mexico, which is in the southeastern part of New Mexico, little town. At that time, it was probably about 5,000 people. My dad had come there after the war. My dad was 54 years old when I was born. You have to realize he was born in 1893. He had actually served in the United States Navy during World War I. My mother was 36 years old, so I was quite a surprise in life to them, because I had siblings that were 20 and 30 years older than I was. That said, my dad worked for a company called Southwestern Public Service. He was a line foreman. After the war, he came there because that's where the jobs were. He was in during the war, he was worked for a utility company on Camp Goober in Oklahoma. And they came there after the war, got a job, and that's how we got to Artesia, New Mexico, and that's where I began.
Oh, great. I'm actually very familiar with Southwestern Public Service, and as we've talked before, I come from Carlsbad, which is right down the street. Did the caveman and bulldog rivalry, was it?
Yeah, it was ferocious. As high schoolers, you're right. Steve grew up enjoying blue, and I grew up enjoying orange and white, and we were a football town, and we couldn't survive without being great rivals within the community. And it was a tradition to have whoever won the high school at that point in time was, if Carlsbad won, they just made it horrendous on Artesia, and vice versa. We just had great rivals.
Oh yeah, definitely. There were some good, I guess you could say, pranks, if you will, driving all the way to Albuquerque to put a beat up bulldog pinata on the goalpost. Or one time we got a casket with a caveman in it. It was, you know, just leading it. That's always been a great rivalry. In the Bulldog Bowl, I'll never forget. You felt like you were in the pros playing in a stadium like that.
And I came out right before the bowl was built. You guys from Carlsbad would come down and burn a C in the middle of our field. It was terrible.
Definitely. Well, everything I read, and when I go home, that rivalry is still going on.
Yes, it is.
Well, so let's talk about your early days in the service. Were you drafted, or when did you enlist? Were you right out of high school?
Well, that's a good point. I graduated in 1966 from high school and immediately went into college. And at that time, I went to a local college there called the College of Artesia. It was an independent, privately endowed school. Mm-hmm. during that time, obviously the Vietnam War was hot and heavy. Every night we'd go home and look at all the atrocities that was going on in Vietnam. And so as a male, you wanted to get in college because you knew that you were going to get drafted. And there wasn't no draft lottery at that time. You just got drafted. And you got to realize the philosophy of the even in high school, if you got in trouble in high school and was a local bully or petty stuff that kids did, they usually gave you a choice to either go to jail or you went to the military. Well, really. I didn't have any of that problem, but as I went through college, my first year of college, it became apparent, especially in my second semester, that I called my local draft board, which was in Carlsbad, talked to a lady that ran that. Her name was Mrs. Anderson. I never forgot her name, and said that I was thinking on transferring to another school, and I was very worried about my draft status. And I had a deferment at that point in time, as long as I was going to school. She informed me that my name had already been selected for a draft in June.
Oh, wow.
I thought, well, this is January. And she said, well, I'm going to give you some options. You either join the military of your service or you'll probably be your name will be on a draft notice. I thought, what about my deferment? She said, we have had a call of a number of people, and we have selected those. And I'm not trying to tell you that to scare you. I'm just trying to tell you either by June, you're either in the service or we're going to put you in the service. And of course, she came back with a point of saying, as long as you can pass the physical. Well, I'd already passed the physical. That really prompted me to start looking around. I looked at the Navy. They didn't seem interested. It seemed like they had plenty of people going in. The Marines were taking, all they wanted to do was hand you a rifle. I went home and told my dad I was going to join the Marines. And he said, what kind of job skill are they going to train you? I said, to shoot a rifle. He said, okay, I want you to rethink this. I want you to go in and pick you a profession in the military that you can pull back out once you leave the military that you could use in civilian life. Well, I didn't think a rifleman would be at the point. So I went over and talked to the Army, and the Army guy told me he was not very – the recruiter was terrible. He didn't seem to want to be interested. He gave me a test, and he came back and said, you know, the only jobs we're offering is cooks and truck drivers. And I thought, well, that's not something I want to carry through life. And I'm good at boiling water, but that's about it. I went over to the National Guard. They did have some openings, and they did tell me they would be interested in taking me. They were an air defense unit, New Mexico was, and so I ventured over to an Army Reserve Center just across the street from my college. And so I went over and talked to those guys, and they had two positions. They had wheel mechanic, and they also, which was a mechanic on trucks, and then they had a clerk typist job. Well, I've taken typing in school. I knew everything about that. So I took that job. That was just a little E4 job. And so on April 28, 1967, I joined the Army Reserves. And so at that point in time, I went to monthly drills. Our drill situation was a little bit different. It was not one week in a month. And sometimes we would do what we'd do one day a month and then two Fridays a month.
Oh, I see.
So you'd have 4 hours on a Friday afternoon from 4 o'clock till 8 at night. Well, we did go to annual training once a year. The equipment we had at that reserve center was trucks that were 1949, 1953 trucks.
Wow.
We were very aged vehicles. We were a transportation company, And that transportation company was actually a warehouse storage unit. So my aunt, before I got to basic training, we actually went to summer camp in Atlanta, Georgia, to the Atlanta Army Depot. And there I was, a little E-2 in the United States Army Reserves, sitting in front of a typewriter and didn't understand anything. The issue that I had there was we had people that had joined the Army Reserves that were people from Roswell, Carlsbad, and other places, but there was nobody in my grade of 1966 that had joined the Army Reserve. So I had classmates that were a year ahead of me or 2 years ahead of me and a couple of years behind me in my reserve unit. They were very cliquish. I was a little more serious at my job than they did. I polished my boots. I stood in uniform, and I could tell this was a kind of a unit that was just a good old boys, just a bunch of good old boys. Had a good commander, had an excellent first sergeant, and I guess he picked me out a little bit and said, "Come here, where are you going to go in this?" I was a little surprised by that thought. Because I did stand out from those guys. Took a lot of heat from that, a lot of bullying. Well, anyway, I went off to came back from annual training, and then on October 2nd, 1967, I went to basic training in El Paso, Texas. Well, my dad had said, told me, he says, "You're going to get to see part of the United States you haven't seen." Well, I'd been to El Paso. We were in up on Logan Heights in not too far off of what now is called Highway 54. Those buildings have since been torn down. But we were brought together, a bunch of draftees, National Guard, active duty, people that had joined. And so I got to meet 60 other guys alphabetically because I was in the C's, A through D was my unit. And I got there, and my drill sergeant, rather, sat down and talked to me and said, "I noticed you put down there that you had knew how to march troops." Well, I'd been in – yes, I had. And I'd been with a bunch of guys that had taught me how to march. So he made me the trainee platoon sergeant. So I got to strap on this little three stripes, and I got to march and be the leader of our platoon. Well, that was really kind of neat because our first movement to anywhere was to the chow hall one morning, and it was dark 4:30 in the morning, and it was a consolidated mess hall. It went on. Troops were standing out all over the place, and I could see a little square of a window where people were going in and eating. This unit or this chow hall was where they could feed thousands of troops a day. And so it was a big mess hall. Well, I remember standing there with those troops, and we were way back. And I remember what my platoon sergeant said. He said, "Get them to chow." So I told our four guys in front, I said, "Okay, I'm going to give forward march. I want you to go to that bright spot next to that building." I moved our troops between everybody else. And we got up there, and we got in line and got fed within 5 minutes. We had people in the building. I remember standing there, training sergeant came up to me in the chow hall and said, "How did you get here?" And I said, "You told me to take them to chow." I had a job.
Oh, great. Any other details regarding basic training that you wanted to share with us?
Well, throwing those bunch of guys together, didn't know each other. They came from all walks of life. I met one guy. He had just finished college. He was to be an attorney, and he got drafted. I met people that didn't have even a high school education, but They got drafted. I met some people that were come off of the Indian reservation of North or South Dakota. That,
oh wow!
They were drafted also, but they were very confused of why they were there. So, but I can tell you, we became some of the closest bunch of people I've ever seen. We became brothers.
Oh wow!
I don't know how to explain that, but we trained together, we laughed together, and we agonized together. And everybody helped everybody. I don't know what that just gelled real quick.
I'm sure. I couldn't even imagine. Did you ever get caught breaking any rules?
Or no.
Did you ever get away with something you weren't supposed to do?
Yeah, there's
share
a couple of times as a trainee platoon sergeant, especially in basic training, we had these inspections, and one night it became apparent that we weren't going to be ready to for that inspection because they had turned out the lights at 10 o'clock.
Oh, no.
Well, we put blankets up over the windows, and they were – and so we put the blankets up over, and we were working in, and then here come this red-headed lieutenant.
Uh-oh.
And he had a little armband on that said OD. He was the officer of the day, and he wanted to know who was responsible for covering up those windows. And so we went on from there. He reported me. And so the next morning while we were inspection, I got to walk down to the battalion commander with my trainee platoon sergeant, or my training sergeant, and we walked down, and I got ripped to pieces about smothering men by covering up the blankets or putting blankets over windows. They told my sergeant to take those stripes off of me and replace me with somebody else. We walked back down the street. And I didn't say a word, and he didn't say a word, and I went back to my work, and he went back to his work, and nothing was ever said. And it really was – well, two or three weeks later, we had a guy that never would take a shower.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. We had a guy in our unit that didn't take a shower.
I've heard stories like this before.
this guy, he would start smelling pretty bad. Uh-huh. And so one night, a bunch of those guys in my unit – got him in the shower, and I can tell you, they scrubbed him up with scrub brushes.
Oh,
the scrub brushes were strong enough. There were scratches on him like a cat had got onto him. His eyes were – they'd used Tide soap or laundry soap, and the whites of his eyes were blood red. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to believe this, but here come this red-headed lieutenant that still had this OD.
The same red-headed lieutenant.
And there he stood, and they stood there and said, "Who's responsible for this?" And a bunch of fingers pointed to me.
Oh, no.
Well, next day, I walked down to the battalion with my drill sergeant, and I got ripped to pieces. This guy, this colonel, did not recognize that I'd been there before.
So we're a repeat offender at this point.
I guess. And again, he said, "Take those stripes off, replace him." We walked back down that same street, going back. I unpinned those stripes and handed them to my training sergeant. And I said, "Well, I guess I'm fired." He said, "I'll make that decision. That guy doesn't run my life or yours. Put him on." I survived basic training.
Great. it's really interesting. As a civilian, you wouldn't think that something, to me, you wouldn't think something as minor as covering up a window, would be such a serious offense. But, as in the military, that is a very, very serious offense that gets you, sent to the lieutenant's office or the principal's office, if you will, a couple of times. Before you went to the extreme of, showering this individual, I mean, did he ever give you any kind of reason, or did anybody approach him and say, take a shower? He caught a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, people that – you got to remember those – we were in barracks that had bunks, and so everybody was either sleeping next to somebody or above somebody or below somebody, and that was – the smell was unbelievable.
Wow.
By the way, he did start taking a shower.
He starts out. Okay, so it worked. Did you ever learn something about a fellow service member that surprised you? I mean, you mentioned they're from all walks of life, and at that point, I'm sure there's a lot that you got to learn about.
I did, and I met him. I met a guy that had been in an orphanage, and his parents had given him up, not early in life, but just dropped him off. And he was kind of in the foster care system for a while, but then it picked up by an orphanage. And he lived there until he graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. And he said once he graduated, they told him, you can either go find you a place to work or you can go to the military. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had joined the military to make that happen. This guy had a very rough life. I got to be very good friends with him, and he had his morals high. He had a direction in life. He was somebody that was going to go places in life. Mm-hmm. I wish I still remember his name, but I don't know wherever he went. Of course, today's environment, I think you can probably find anybody on earth. Mm-hmm. But for a young man that had struggled through his adolescence in an orphanage, he was a guy that I would exemplify as a real true citizen.
Wow. Well, I hope you find him. Maybe he'll hear this interview and and want to reach out to you. So how many years did you end up serving total?
Well, started April of 1967. I ended up in July of 1999 with 32 years of service. As I told you before, that I had a first sergeant that kind of looked at my direction in life in the Army Reserves. The Army Reserve, as soon as I got back from basic training, our Army Reserve unit had been redesignated as a petroleum unit. Mm-hmm. The problem was I didn't have the same military occupational skill. Mm-hmm. That's called an MOS. I'd gone to AIT, Advanced Individual Training, as a clerk typist, but as soon as I came back, got home, I was now a petroleum lab specialist. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the difference between the active Army and the Army Reserves and National Guard, okay? The Army Reserve and National Guard is what I call there is two armies. They would send, if you were on active duty, they would send you back to an active duty school, mm-hmm. and you'd get that military occupational skill and graduate. The Army Reserve or National Guard people, they didn't have that ability. They mm-hmm. did what we call on-the-job training. Well, I was in a lab, petroleum lab. We didn't have a lab at that point in time, and so the only time I went to training was during my 2 weeks, and that would have been at Fort Lee, Virginia. The problem with that was this school was about 12 weeks long. It was impossible to become proficient in that job mm-hmm. doing 2 weeks. Doing 2 weeks a year. Mm-hmm. And so it was really hard. Well, my first sergeant at that point in time knew that I was really struggling at trying to, so he made me the training person. In other words, I was in charge of the training. I would type out training schedules. I would set to make sure that all the material was put out for that training. That was a real blessing for me because I didn't get really proficient in being a lab specialist, but I got mm-hmm. proficient in how units should train in looking. I got to looking at higher units and getting the ability to see what their guidance was. We did about the same thing every month. We'd go out and inspect our trucks. We would do some marching. And during those days, we'd actually do riot control. You've got mm-hmm. to remember, we were in the middle of a Vietnam / not being accepted very well, and college campuses mm-hmm. were having issues. And so they actually trained us in riot control.
Oh, wow.
Never got to do that, thank mm-hmm. goodness. But as time went on, I started looking with the guidance of my first sergeant. He started sending me to schools. Mm-hmm. and I didn't go to annual training with my unit. I was in school somewhere, or I was on a weekend going here or a weekend going there. And so a lot of things, I got to being proficient enough that when people started leaving the unit and slots opened up for a promotion, I could raise my hand and said, I've been to that school, I have that certificate, and I could move up. I will tell you, I went from became a training sergeant and then went into being a platoon sergeant. Believe it or not, I became a first sergeant very quick in the military. In 12 years, I was first sergeant of that unit. Well, as time went on, I got promoted and 18 months later and got my first sergeant's stripes. And 3 years later, I was offered a battalion job as command sergeant major. And that's selected by a commander. Evidently, somebody had saw a direction that I all that training and all that missing was a unit and going off to school was totally different. Let me tell you a little bit about annual training.
Absolutely.
And for Army Reserve units. It was usually if we went to Fort Lee, it was MOS training. And so people got to hone their skills at basically a training style classroom or out in the field. With the problem was a lot of times when we went to an active base where we were in a program where we were supporting other units, well, you have to realize there was sometimes that we didn't have any money. Let me tell you, the President of the United States regulated and Congress regulated how the military was, and the Army Reserves and some of the National Guard units didn't have much to do. And when I got in, President Lyndon Baines Johnson was president, but when I got out, Bush was president. But during those times, between those presidents, times were either good or very bad, and the worst time we had was when President Carter was. There was no funding. We used to go out in the field, and we were a petroleum unit. We could lay all our equipment out, but we didn't have the ability to pump fuel because there was no money.
Oh.
The bags sent empty. We didn't pump a drop down the line. Well, that changed when Reagan came president. Let me tell you. He put the teeth back in the military, and especially the Army and our Army Reserves and National Guard. We actually did live training. We went out with Marines. We went out with active duty troops. We went out and actually pumped fuel in our unit at that point in time. And we slung load blivets for under helicopters. We were active in all of it. It was an active duty unit, basically, what we put together. That was really good for us. The difference that I would say in the early days of that, in my training as an enlisted guy, we sit a lot of times and playing cards. We had a lot of card-playing guys when I first got in. Mm. And we lived in old World War II barracks, and we'd always know where not to put our bunk. If the card players were at one end of the barracks, we would move to the opposite end because I could turn my light bulb off and they could play to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I didn't care because those days went away. We don't have card players anymore in our military.
Or really in civilian life either. You don't see it very often.
Yeah. I spent my 32 years. I made command sergeant major literally in 17. Okay. In 17 years. Mm-hmm. That was almost unheard of. I went up to a battalion and ended up going to a group headquarters later. Got the chance to go to Korea 3 different times, Germany 3 different times, and do active training missions there with active duty, and loved the way Korea was put together. I was with a petroleum unit up there, and it's probably one of the easiest jobs in the military because the Koreans did everything, all the hard work for us. Mm-hmm. Probably the hardest working bunch of people I've ever seen in my life. While I was in Germany, we did the same thing, although I got in a unit that at that point in time when I was just a sergeant major, working, and then I was in charge of moving fuel. And there was called a place called Donetsk-Metz Pipeline. It went from Donetsk, France to Metz, France. And that's how the military got their fuel into Germany. And then it was and it was all through a pipeline. And then it was dispersed through pipelines. We either move fuel by barges or rail cars or pipelines in Germany. And it was massive amounts. We didn't use trucks because we moved massive amounts of fuel. And so those are the things that we worked with. I met some of the greatest people in the world, and I enjoyed the German officers and military I worked with, the sharpest people I ever was around in my life. I can understand the German food was awesome.
Right.
Now, somebody would ask me if I'd ever moved to another country. I'd move to Germany, but I would weigh 300 pounds because I love their food.
Oh, really?
And I'd be an alcoholic because I love their beer.
Oh, really? Well, what would you say, I mean, your time in the military, how it affected you? What would you say the one thing that you learned about yourself, even as you got out?
Well, I found me. I took a Dale Carnegie course one time, and that was another way to find me. But the Army allowed me to be me, and they allowed me to be what I wanted to be.
Great.
And I think in one of some of their advertising, "Be all you want to be." Well, the Army allowed me to do that.
Great.
And it let me be – I was with some of the greatest people. Of course, in the military, you meet some of the biggest jerks and assholes in the world. Sorry to say that, but that's the way it is. But I met some of the brightest people, and I migrated to those people, and we did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Two of my colonels that I served with, both of them made general, and one of them made two-star, and probably some of the finest people I ever met. General Johnson was probably one of the sharpest guys. He was instructor at UTEP and the head of the English department.
Oh, wow.
And retired as a two-star general. I enjoyed him very much.
Great. So how did you, you know, when you got, how did you meet your wife?
And, that's interesting. I met her. She lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but she was trying to find an Army Reserve unit. And she joined an Army Reserve unit in Artesia. Her parents lived in Roswell at that point in time. And so she would travel on the weekends down to meet them. And so she'd spend the weekend there. But a lot of times she would come out and obviously joined the Army Reserve. She had active 2 years active duty. And so she was needed some extra money because she was trying to go through college at the University of New Mexico. And so she was using the GI plan.
Okay.
And so she was there.
Let me ask just before you go, what did a semester of college cost?
Oh, when I first started, I'm going to tell you, it was $12 an hour.
That is amazing. And, our sound guy right now, his face just he's in shock right now.
He's in shock. Yeah, $12 an hour. So if you took a 3-hour credit, well, multiply that times 12.
Absolutely. Wow. So did you meet her when she was?
Yeah, we joined the Army Reserve. I had gotten a divorce we got to knowing each other very well over the time, and I will tell you, she's smarter than I am, and that's how that marriage works so well. And we've been married 37 years.
Oh, wow.
And so she also retired after 22 years as a first sergeant, and so I retired as a command sergeant major and after 32, And so I will tell you this, the best thing that happens with the military, and whether you're in it, is being a retiree. The money's not the greatest thing in the world for us because we didn't get all those many points, but I can tell you the awesomeness of it is the medical.
Wow.
And TRICARE, and of course, once you get 65, they take you out of TRICARE and put you obviously in Medicare, mm-hmm. but you also have a secondary as TRICARE for life. And so that is very inexpensive. And I can tell you guys, if you want to go somewhere in life, the military is the place to go. Now, somebody asked me this question one time. Mm-hmm. If I had to do it over again, where would I have gone? I would have probably gone to the Air Force.
Really?
You know why? Because they're guaranteed to slip their feet between two sheets every night.
Oh, really?
In the Army, and I'm sure the Marines are this way, let me tell you, you know what tent life is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what it is to sleep on the ground at night and take a shower once every week or so.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked me if we'd like to go camping. let me tell you, I've done about all the camping I want. So there you are, kid.
Absolutely. Well, it's definitely been this has been amazing. You know, over the 7 years that you and I have been work colleagues, you know, I've definitely learned a lot about you. And I knew of your military background, but never as in depth, you know, as this. And so I have such of course, always had an appreciation for you, but definitely that's greater now. And you seem to have this, will to serve. I mean, I've also, we've talked about your service in the Artesia City Council, and even now some of your extracurricular activities, if you will, are focused around what's going on in our military now, especially here in Las Cruces and in Doña Ana County. So it's definitely in your DNA, and it's never going to go away. That's
here's
for sure.
Where you're going to find something that I can start all over again.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you, if I had to start with a draft again.
Uh-huh.
I think it's an honor to serve your country, for one thing. The second thing is to serve somehow in the military for it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember during my time when you got 18 years old mm-hmm. and you got out of high school and you didn't have a deferment, you went and served at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it took a lot of boys and they brought them back men.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that today. I look at some of our youth today, and they need some guidance once they get out of high school. They seem to not have a position to go. I think the military would gives you that opportunity to at least try where you want to be. It was a good fit for me. It was regimented. I understand that, and that's where it went. And I think people sometimes need some regimentation in their life to start their life.
Absolutely. Well, it gives you an opportunity to to learn how to put a plan together, and I'll be one of the first to admit I didn't have a plan either. Actually, didn't have a plan until I actually made it up here. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I can completely see that. This has been an absolute honor, Bill. I really didn't. I personally didn't know what to expect, and but this has been just hearing your story and.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Thank you for this group and the people that are trying to put the history together. It's an honor.
It really is. Any last word you have? We'll give you the last word. How's that?
Yeah. I think the United States is a great country.
I can
and I can tell you that. It's put together by people that are trying to make it right, and mm-hmm. and I pray for the troops. I pray for the families of the troops. And I honor those that have fallen and made our country so great.
Amen.
God bless America.
God bless. I second all that. Well, thank you all very much.